Bristol, For the Record, a new local oral history podcast from BCFM Radio in partnership with MShed Bristol and funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund.
The Bristol Older People's Forum was formed back in 1993, and it has nearly 3,000 members aged 55 and above. Their mission is for every older person in the city to be an equal, valued, and participating member of the community, able to influence policy and decision-making, challenge ageism, and promote Bristol as an age-friendly city. For this episode of Bristol For The Record, we are joined by the Forum's Engagement and Development Lead, Ian Quaife, to find out more about older people's lives in the city today, in the past, and the future. Hi, Ian.
Hello, mate. You okay?
So, to kick things off, when is someone considered an older person?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Right to the heart of the matter. Who are the old people? Who are they? I don't know. Now, I tell you what, the sector, the older people's industry, right, the sector from policy level right through political level, draw the lines around the parameters around age 50 or 55, right through to, well, you tell me, 100, 110, who's the oldest person? That's the big challenge, really. There are three generations within that cohort, you know, three generations with different ideas, different backgrounds, different genders, different worldviews. There might be common ground between them, but that's a big group of people. So the problem is that you tend to get lumped into one big group. And then that obviously reinforces kind of sort of stereotypes around age and older people. So it is a big challenge. I don't know the answer. We're all different. I'm in my 60s. You sort of have a different worldview in your 60s, maybe. A different challenge is to when you're 70, in your 70s or your 80s. You've got to recognise the diversity within that group, I think.
What is the appropriate term to use for older people? Because some people say the elderly, OAPs. Which one's the best and why?
I think the one to challenge first would be the elderly. You know, the idea that it's offensive, to be honest. It's like saying the disabled. It's like othering people. It's like, again, it's homogenising one particular group. And I think the term the elderly, you know, when you say the term the elderly, you kind of link it with vulnerability and frailty, and other kind of types of negative stereotyping of older people. So I think generally that would be ruled out. Although you hear it a lot, it's interesting because you just need to tune into, well, a Today program on Radio 4 in the mornings. They're always saying the elderly this, the elderly that. So in the media, it's kind of still used, but it needs to be challenged, I think, you know. We need to challenge that one. Old age pensioners, old age pensioners. What does that mean? Old age, you get your state pension when you're 66. That's when people in Britain get their state pension at 66. So you're kind of ruling out the people who are maybe younger than that. So old age pensioners, it's patronising. And again, it's just lumping everyone into the same sort of group. I don't like any of that sort of stuff. Senior citizens, silver, surfers, whatever. I would stick with the older people. That's what we use. That can be challenged. Some people don't like that because some people don't see themselves as old. You might be 55 and still think you're a young person. That's fair enough. But older people is the term we use.
Do older people get a bad press, such as living in their houses they bought for nothing, becoming increasingly more angry and right-wing?
I get more angry and left-wing, but that is a stereotype, I think it's fair to say. But they're probably statistically a kind of grain of truth in it. However, I mean, demographics are changing all the time. As we all get older, more and more of us won't have kind of nice paid-off mortgages and nice houses to live in. But I think it's just worth mentioning that this is a DWP figure, Department of Work and Pensions. 1.9 million older people over the age of 65 live in relative poverty in this country, and then 1.1 million in severe poverty. And that was in 2018 figure, so it's probably got worse. Again, another fact, 4.3 million live in non-decent homes in this country. In England, 21% of those are headed by people over the age of 75. Again, that's housing survey figures for Bristol. It's our own housing survey figures. So, you know, the idea that we're all kind of paid off mortgages, comfortable, voting Tory, all those things is changing, definitely changing. Things are, unfortunately, some things changing for the worst. Obviously, people being able the ability to buy your house, the ability to pay your mortgage off. There are more and more older people living in the rented sector in Bristol. There are more and more older people that are presented as homeless in Bristol, 72 this year so far. doesn't sound many, but you think about it, if you're 72 people over the age of 65 presenting themselves as a homeless, that's not a good situation. Yeah, so I would always challenge that stereotype. Although I understand it, you know, the Daily Mail is bought by older people, Daily Express, all that sort of thing. There is still an element there, but I would say the facts would say things are changing. Demographics are changing. There's a lot of older people that are activists through Restorative People's Forum and wider, who are definitely not right-wing and kind of worried about climate change and worried about the state of the country, the NHS and all that. So, yeah, things are shifting, I think it's fair to say, Marcus.
Can you tell us more about the Bristol Older People's Forum and what they actually do?
We're a membership organisation, got just under 3,000 members at the moment. We provide a range of services. I ain't got any paperwork in front of me, but off the top of my head, we do things like we've got a regular newsletter that goes out, it's like quarterly, and that goes out, posted out, and online as well. But the posted out because a lot of our members are digitally excluded, not online. So we need hard copy for them. So it's a well-received magazine. We do it with the City Council because they pay for it, to be honest, which is good because it's print costs and postage costs are high. So, and we're focusing on the cost of living. So we're doing a lot of cost of living work in general at the moment. We've got a food recipe kind of project going, food recipe book project going. We've got regular discussion group. We talk about all sorts of issues that affect older people and wider. Got a vinyl record club, particularly aimed at older men. A lot of older men don't participate in things. So you come along and talk about your favourite album track. Talk about the narrative and the story behind it. Goes down really well. So we do those online and we do those in person. I do a challenging ageism workshop, and that's aimed at older people and professionals. We're really keen for more professionals to come along because they don't always know stuff. And it's surprising when you're working in the sector. There's so many people, and these are the basic things, don't even know when the state pension age is, and they're working within older people's sector. Ask them, when do people get their pension? They haven't got a clue. Things like that. And then just challenging some of the stereotypes of age and ageism and the discrimination around age and ageism, particularly in the workplace. So we do a lot of that. Yeah, we've been doing a couple of things. Did some work with a watershed recently about LGBTQ plus elders. And that was looking at the language in particular. Sorry, and it was Watershed and Bristol and University of Bristol. And looking at kind of identity and words that we use to describe, or words they use to describe themselves. And why it was interesting, because we were looking at it from LGBT elders community. Because I'll give you an example. So a word like queer, which has been a word that's been reclaimed in a way, and there's a kind of political movement. But for some of the older people elders that we talk to, they were not as relaxed about the word because the word was originally used as a derogatory term, as a pejorative, a queer and so on and so forth. So there was some kind of interesting sort of exploration around that word and other words as well. So one of the other things we do is quite a lot of research work, asking older people their views on a range of topics, some of which I've mentioned today. So we do quite a lot of survey work, and we both at a local and a national level, and that feeds into kind of policy as well. I interviewed quite a few LGBTQ plus elders, and we were talking about the struggles. I talked to a group of gay men, and it was about the struggles of pre-1967-68 when legislation changed and made homosexuality was illegal before those dates, and the struggles that they had of being gay at that time and how things have changed, some of which have changed for the better, some of which haven't, because there's been a rise in homophobia and transphobia as well. So those are areas I think we're quite keen to explore as an older people's organisation, because they tend not to be areas that get talked about and discussed. And I think a little bit more now, because there is some good academic stuff going on. But I think it sort of relates, Marcus, to another stereotype, really, the idea that older people over the age of 40 don't, or 50 maybe, don't indulge in any sexual activity, which is, or want to talk about it, which is quite serious in a way, because I think a lot of policy within, say, care homes for example, don't really cater for same-sex couples at all, or the fact that older people might want to get together. And interestingly, there's been a rise in sexually transmitted diseases, for example, in the care home sector, which is kind of interesting. So I think we got to challenge the idea that people don't want to have a bit of a kiss and a cuddle after a certain age. Let's put it that way. These are really important issues, and issues that we want to kind of, you know, just push the boundaries a little bit on. We do a lot of social events where we bring people together, because it's been a tough, as you know, it's been a tough 3 years. 3 years, COVID, and then straight to the cost of living crisis. So social events, bring people together, put a bit of food on, have a nice kind of social event. And they're important to us as well. But really, the most important bit of our work in a way is we do two things. Advisory work, so we advise on issues around older people. We work with the city council, with the health service and so on. We advise them on all sorts of things because they get things wrong sometimes, so we have to advise. We consult. We consult because we've got 3,000 members who want to have a voice. So that collective voice is important. So we do that as well. So we do a lot of campaigning. We're working on the bus campaign now, Reclaim the Buses. First Bus are cutting the buses, bus routes and the buses. That affects older people, affects everybody, but certainly affects older people. We're doing a lot of work on that to try to bring, though the long-term aim will be to bring buses back under public control and the franchise system, like they've got in London and what they've just introduced in the Manchester region. Accessible toilets for older people and disabled people and others, pregnant women. There's not enough toilets in the city where you can, so people stay in, they don't go out because they know they might get caught short. So accessible toilets is a big issue for us. So we kind of campaign on those things. I could go on all day about it, really. You got a lot, when you've got a big membership, you get a lot of issues being brought to you. So we try to act upon all those things.
And Ian, how did you get involved and why? What's your journey?
I used to be the head of community development in Bristol City Council, manager of development and community cohesion and equalities at the end as well. But I took early retirement in 2014. Took early retirement and then I was a house husband for 4 years. My lads were a bit younger. So I was dossing around, sitting on the sofa, watching that afternoon TV, buying my commemorative gold coins and Stana stairlifts, watching all those adverts. But then my wife said, you know, I think you should get out and get some money in. So I saw this job advertised and applied for it. That was 5 years ago. So I've been development manager, is my exact title at the Older People's Forum. And we've kind of basically transformed it from quite a small organisation into an organisation that gets kind of fairly good funding from City Council and other contracts that we've got. And the dual aim is to promote an age-friendly city, is to promote the social model of age, not always the medical model. And the social model kind of is about ensuring older people are around the table as equal partners to influence policy. So it's a good job, interesting job. And I get a chance to kind of meet interesting people like yourself, people at the top, whether they're decision makers and, you know, local residents as well. So we get a mixture.
From your work and knowledge, what are some of the key moments and movements in history of Bristol relating to older people?
Well, it's an interesting one because if you trace ages and back, not just in Bristol, but in Western civilization, you can see that age has always been a problem. Older people have always been seen as a problem because they're seen as economically unproductive. So, but taking it forward is difficult because there's been struggles since the beginning of the century. You know, in terms of there was no pensions until early 1908, something like that. The first time they ever introduced a kind of state pension. Before that, you were reliant on your family or, you know, with a poorhouse as you got older. So there's been a struggle around pensions. There's been a struggle about, there's been a struggle to get a decent amount of money coming in when you retire. We've got one of the lowest pensions in Western Europe, even though it's kind of linked to something called the triple lock, kind of protects it against inflation. It's still one of the lowest. Well, I bet you any money, you ain't got a clue how much state pension is. I'm not saying that as a criticism, but people that haven't reached state pension age don't usually have a clue. They think it's either a lot less or a lot more than it is. So, but the struggle continues. There's a big campaign called the WASPI campaign, and that was because the government decided to equalise pensions. So it used to be 65 for men and 60 for women. So what did they do? They just basically equalised it up to 65. So suddenly women that were just coming up to their pension suddenly lost 5 years of pension. And that was completely, a huge injustice took place. And that struggle and campaign is still going on. It's now, they've now, and what they're doing now is putting it up. So it's 66 now. Next couple of years, going to be up to 67. But by the time you retire, you'll probably get your pension when you're about 94. So, you know, happy days.
In terms of Bristol specifically, can you think of any other key moments or movement relating to older people?
Well, I don't think they're necessarily age-related. I think, you know, a lot of older people have been involved in, say, trade union movements. One of the ones that I think is interesting now is, and obviously they weren't old at the time, but the Bristol bus boycott. I mean, the kind of some of the activists involved in that are, you know, thankfully still with us. Unfortunately, Roy Hackett, who was one of our members, died last year. But beyond the bus boycott, you might be able to get a job on the buses. But it's not long since we had, the issues around Colston and the slave trade. And that was an interesting one because a lot of older people still like the name Colston Hall and didn't like the fact that it was changing to the Bristol Beacon. But many of us thought it was a good thing. So there was a kind of mixed reaction to that. The struggles go on. There's struggles now, and older people are involved in, as I say, the bus campaign, climate change campaigns, stopping evictions and on rent arrears, all sorts of things where older people are kind of involved with and can offer lots of experience. You know, the struggle around housing in Bristol, you know, to make sure housing's available for old people, and it's, things like retrofitting to make sure the houses can accommodate the needs of older people. Those are some of the struggles that we're involved in, and older people are involved in those struggles.
You mentioned Roy Hackett. Can you share with us some of other older Bristol pioneers now and in the past?
I mean, from Bristol to People's Forum, one of our pioneers really is Judith Brown, who was there at the beginning. She was probably there not from 93, but afterwards, but has done a lot of work in Bristol. Is still an ambassador. She's in her 80s now, she won't mind me saying. Still an ambassador for the Bristol to People's Forum. But as an activist, has worked with HUK Bristol and has also always challenged the city council and others to try to ensure that older people are kind of part of the solution and not part of the problem. So I would always mention Judith Brown. Well, you know, there's obvious ones. You know, it's like DJ Derek, obviously, in terms of culture and music. You know, he was significant, wasn't he, as a kind of a white guy, ordinary white guy, moved to St. Paul's, became a pretty famous DJ in this country, you know, Glastonbury Festival and so on and so forth, and was very influential in terms of what he did and promoting reggae and blue beat and so on. I think DJ Derek, you know, as well, God rest his soul, still well respected in the city. Do you know Peaches Golding's another person? She's the High Sheriff. She's got whatever that is, don't ask me, High Sheriff. It's very important, all in a. So it's one of those establishment things, isn't it, they have in Bristol. But she's, and again, she's challenging some of the kind of white establishment sort of ways of doing things, I think. And Peaches is very articulate. I don't know her very well. I've met her. But very articulate, understands a lot of the issues. But I would say is kind of more of an establishment figure. But that's fine. We need people like Peaches Golding, you know, within some of these establishments. So, well, I would say her. Ooh. Who else? I don't know. Madge Dresser. She's a professor at Bristol University. She's written a lot about the slave trade. She's written a lot about the kind of anti-Semitism, I think, as well. And I think she's, again, a well-respected academic within the city and has done a lot of work throughout her career. But as an older person, she continues. Massive Attack, they're getting on a bit now, aren't they? They're in their 60s, they're pioneers. Yeah, but it's, you know what I mean? It's that thing about who's old, you know? It's like, they are pioneers of music. They're probably in their late 50s, I would say, probably, or early 60s now. So, yeah, there's lots of people. But to be honest, I mean, a lot of the people in general that kind of change things, are, you know, from a grassroots point of view, aren't always well-known, do you know what I mean? They don't necessarily get the kind of the coverage that, say, some of the more establishment figures get. So, but yeah. I'm sure there are lots of others. That's the ones I can think of off the top of my head.
So there's a number of organisations that help and support older persons living in the city. Can you go through some of them and tell us what they do?
It depends where you're coming from on this. It depends how you look at it. You've got to remember there are a lot of services for older people might be based around their medical needs, for example. Oh, and another guy I mentioned, a guy called Tony Hall, runs something called the Bristol Action Dementia Action Alliance. Now, he's an interesting fella. So in terms of being a pioneer, but also he works with, supports people that are living with dementia and their carers as well. So from a medical point of view, Tony's one of the leading kind of experts around that. And when I say he's an expert, he's an expert because he's lived it. His wife lived with dementia for a number of years before she passed away. So he kind of understands those issues. So, I mean, that's an important organisation. I don't even like calling it medical, but because Tony would offer support around social events and so on and so forth. But a lot of the work within the older people's sector tends to be around support, around information and advice, for example. So you've got places like Age UK Bristol. Well, Age UK are a national organisation. They franchise. So there's a Age UK Bristol. So they run a lot of... So we share an office with them. I've got a little office next door to them. So they're much bigger than us. They haven't got a membership, but they provide a lot of services. If you want to go along and find out if you're entitled to pension credits, or if you want to find out about, you might be getting scammed. Lots of people older people get scammed, so they can provide a service around them. They have discos and all sorts of things. So Age UK Bristol, as I say, are kind of a bigger organisation. Then you've got groups like Somali Elders, you've got the Somali Advice Centre, you've got DEC Bar for South Asian Elders, Malcolm X Elders. There's literally scores and scores of groups that are working with older people. Well, we're probably the only one is more like a kind of trade union for older people. So we're a little bit different. Don't forget, there's also a care home sector. So you've got care homes, you've got sheltered accommodation, you've got extra sheltered accommodation, mostly in the private sector, not always. You've got some local authority. And then you've got the posh ones, you know, like the Chocolate Box and St. Monica's Trust, which are kind of, you know, if you've got the money, and we're talking big money, you can buy a flat there, or you can rent a flat there, or a house, or a small bungalow. But again, that's going to cost you. The problem is the care sector is privately run, primarily. It's in the private sector. So care homes run for a profit. So they cost. You have to pay. Some people, if you got less than, I think it's £10,000, you can probably get support for your care in a particular residential home. But if you've got more than that, people have to sell their houses. They sell their houses to pay for their rent to stay in a care home, and we're talking £4,000 a month, massively expensive. So there's a kind of whole scandal in the way we don't fund older people as they get older. So they're reliant on selling, if they can afford to sell their house, if they've got a house, sell the house before they go into care. I mean, you can stay at home and have a care package at home. But again, for most people, it's means tested and you have to pay for it. And there's a huge waiting list for care packages. You know, the council work with a voluntary in the private sector. But again, the waiting list is probably a couple of years, you know, to get something in place. So I wouldn't say it's a crisis, but it's teetering on the edge, you know, the whole kind of, and across the country, but they are out on social care. It's just because there are more and more older people with more and more needs, and the system isn't able to cope in the way it should do. The private sector of the care home industry is completely fragmented, you know, so there's individual homes and there's also kind of corporate organisations involved, you know, Virgin Care and all those sort of people. They're all running homes as well. But again, you've got to have the money, really. We're talking, you know, £800 or £900, £1,000 a month for your rent if you're living in a kind of residential setting. And it depends what it is. Residential settings are all kind of coming all sorts of shapes and sizes, you know, from people having their own house and with a community room and living completely independently, right through to people that need 24/7 care. You know, there's a whole range of kind of service provided for older people around that. But it's not a good situation at all.
It seems like a storm's brewing with this, isn't there? What do you see as being the solution?
The worst thing that can happen is to, and this is a kind of political thing, it suits the government to actually say it's on a cliff edge. It's that idea of that the older people are a problem, that older people are a burden, that older people are, as I said earlier, are uneconomic, they're not productive, and people are living longer. So how are we going to pay for them? That's the kind of government, that's how they see it. That's in terms of policy. Rather than saying older people are unpaid carers, older people do a lot of voluntary work, older people have paid into the system for many, many years, for, you know, 50 years, paid their national insurance. They're entitled to live in dignity. They're entitled to live in comfort. It kind of reinforces this negative idea of older people being sort of passive recipients of care and that they're unproductive. And the stats and the facts are that older people are paid into the system. They provide unpaid care for loved ones and grandchildren and kids. And so they're an asset, not a problem. And I think that's the issue, really. The idea that this country, fifth or sixth richest country in the world, can't afford to ensure that older people can live with dignity is a scandal, really. And again, we seem to be able to find money for everything else, but not, again, for the people that are the most vulnerable in society in some ways.
How do you see the future role of older people in Bristol and in general? Will things get better?
What do you think? Do you think things are going to get better? So we're, as I said, our role is to sort of work towards what we say is an age-friendly city. It's a struggle for kind of equality in some ways, because it's sort of saying that we need to have policies, have decision-making that reflects the needs as our society ages, if you like. So we need a decent bus service, for example. We haven't got that. We've got a terrible bus service. It's in the private sector again. It's a rubbish bus service. Social care is in a difficult situation, as I said. We need to challenge age discrimination in the workplace, for example. Not just older people, younger people as well. The idea that older people can't do a job. The idea that younger people need 20 years experience. You always see it on job descriptions and job adverts. You don't need that sort of thing. So we need to be able to challenge that to make sure that the services provided for older people are kind of there. An age-friendly city would be somewhere where every single aspect of life in the city, you know, regeneration, housing, and so on, reflects the needs as we grow older. And it doesn't at the moment. Older people are kind of, you know, as I said, they're shifted to one side, or they're kind of invisible. So there's lots to be done. You know, it's a struggle. Cost of living crisis doesn't help. We've got a lot of older people on very low incomes in Bristol, struggling. And as I say, a lot of older people renting and so on, can't afford to pay their energy bills. It's tough.
Do you see it getting better?
We need a different government. That's the first thing. Get this lot out now. If Labour get in, see what they come up with. In terms of Bristol, it's going to be interesting because obviously the mayoral system is being replaced. Going back to a committee system. And again, we don't know who'd be in charge. Would it be either Labour or possibly the Greens? Or we're not sure. So I think that transformation to the committee system from a Bristol point of view is going to be really, really interesting and will affect everybody, not just older people. There are really good things happening from a grassroots point of view. There are lots of good voluntary groups and people on the ground doing really good things. I just think we need to push the decision makers. And when I say decision makers, I don't just mean Bristol City Council. I mean the West of England Combined Authority. We need to be pushing them all the time to ensure that there are better services for people.
Is it just down to the politicians, though? You mentioned grassroots efforts. I mean, they're important as well, aren't they?
You've got to look, where's the decision making? Where's the power lie? The power lies with the local state, and the power lies with the national government. They make the decisions. All we can do as ordinary citizens is work collectively. It's like being in a trade union. You've got to work and work and work to not only get your voice heard, to get changes made. So we can only do what we can do.
And Ian, what does the future hold for you, mate?
Well, how soon? Well, I do lots of things. I do this job. I do quite a lot of, I do a bit of work. I've been doing some work with the Bristol Beacon around music. I'm doing my drawings, cartoons. Seem to be going down all right. I've been doing a bit of writing for various people. I play in a band, so we'll be doing some music soon as well. and I've got a family. I shall, well, hopefully to avoid death in the sort of fairly near future, you know, it comes to us all in the end. So I'll probably be getting my cremation plan all ready. You can buy them now. And, you know, preparing. Not really. Not quite yet. I don't know. Bristol City tomorrow, Stoke City. Hopefully get a win there. So me and my lad got season tickets.
Well, Ian Craig, it's been absolute pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Yeah, hope it's you can edit, you might need to edit bits and pieces, but yeah, it was interesting.